Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for December 14th, 2010. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. And later this half hour, we'll have energy analysis with Stephen Platt of Archer Financial Services in Chicago, Illinois. In agricultural news, a trade dispute between the U.S. and China is heating up. We'll have that and other stories. Also this half hour, Todd Gleason will share details of a new University of Illinois class on biofuels. It's online and anyone can enroll. It's all on the Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
Here are how futures settled this Tuesday afternoon in Kansas City. December wheat 798.5 down 27.25. March 815 down 20.25. May 823.5 down 19.25. December wheat at the Chicago Board of Trade 721 down 19.25. March 763.25 down 17. May 788.25 down 18.5. December corn 574.5 down 3/4. March 587.25 down 1.25. May 595 down 2. July 599 down 2. September 554.5 down 5. January beans 1296 down 6.5. March 1306 down 6. May 1310.25 down 6.25. July 1311.75 down 6.5. December soybean meal 344.50 down 30. December soybean oil 54.80 down 30. December live cattle 101.82.5 down 12.5. January feeders 117.95 down 125. And December lean hog 68.92.5 down 60. And those are today's settlements in Kansas City and in Chicago, Illinois.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Taking a look at meteorologist Drew Lerner's weather highlights, he says bitter cold will continue across most of the Midwest today and will begin to abate on Thursday. Temperatures will be notably below zero from northern Illinois to northeastern Minnesota tonight, with extreme lows of minus 19 to minus 1. Extreme lows in the lower and eastern Midwest Wednesday will be in the single digits and teens. No major storm systems are expected through the next 10 days, but brief periods of snow and a little freezing rain, sleet, and rain will occur in the Midwest Wednesday into Thursday, with lower parts of the region seeing most of the ice. Snow will fall lightly across the Midwest late this weekend and early next week. Accumulations will be less than an inch or two.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and Moline. More information is available from Bob Baisdiffer in Danville at 217-477-6016. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities. He is in Newmarket, Indiana. Good afternoon, Wayne.
Why, good afternoon, Dave.
Before we get to the grains, let's deal with FOMA. Its statement read this afternoon in part, Wayne, the committee will maintain its existing policy of reinvesting principal payments from its securities holdings. In addition, the committee will purchase $600 billion of longer-term Treasury securities. The committee will maintain the target range for the federal funds rate at 0 to 0.25%. And then this kicker, and continues to anticipate that economic conditions, including low rates of resource utilization, subdued inflation trends, and stable inflation expectations, are likely to warrant exceptionally low levels for the federal funds rate for an extended period. Seems to me they don't think 2011 is going to get us out of the problems that we're in anytime soon.
No, but if you look at the March bonds today, Dave, they're trading at 119.16, down 2 and 15 ticks. Two full points and 15 ticks, about 2.5 points lower. So that means that the private sector is saying just the opposite of what they're saying as far as the trading's going on. So a little bit of a conflict there between some of the traders and what the government is saying.
It must be a difference in interpretation of things like today's retail sales and PPI data.
You know, I'm not sure what's going on, but there does seem to be an underlying trade attitude of those that trade the bonds as to be more sellers than buyers at this point in time. So that's just interesting the way the government said that and the way that they've been talking on CNBC and as we've been going through the day today.
Let's turn our attention to the grain market at Kansas City and Chicago, where wheat was a leader to the downside.
Wheat sure was a leader today, Dave. A couple things happened. Number one, you know, we've seen the funds did cover somewhere around 30,000 contracts as short that they had over the last couple weeks, and we think that that's got them more of an even position. So there wasn't that support that was maybe overdone to the top side. Secondly, we see a little drier weather forecast for the next 2 weeks in Australia. Which means hopefully they can get to the field and at least see what some of this crop is going to look like and what it can be. We've got a little more rain in Argentina forecast here, but they're still 50% of what their normal rainfall has been since the 1st of October there, so a little bit that way. And today also we heard that there was one very, very large stop that was hit somewhere with 3,000 or 4,000 contracts of wheat that took an extra move down of 5 to 7 cents before all of it could be filled, and which also triggered some other stops in the wheat market today, Dave.
You mentioned Australia. I want to touch on that a little bit more. Lots of rain out there. Haven't been able to get to the fields. Trade is well aware of this. Is there very much more quality premium that can be built into this wheat market as field grain?
Well, I think that, you know, as we look at a lot of things, I think that you're going to see definitely a two-tier system as we have between the feed wheat and the milling quality wheat. And that's one of the reasons that we have looked more so to some of the U.S. wheat over the last year, because we do have some good quality wheat left here. We're Argentina and Australia, you know, some of theirs is more of it is going towards the feed wheat line.
Another reason, I guess, you might look at the break in the wheat, in addition to all that you said, is the dollar's ticking up again.
The dollar is back up. It's up about 13 cents here right now, you know, finding a little bit of strength. And also the crude oil is down about 48 cents as we speak here. So, you know, just a little bit of a crazy attitude there. We've seen the crude oil have over a dollar trading range today here. And, you know, we know that we'd like it to stay strong for as far as the corn prices go and the ethanol attitude. But a lot of travel going to be going on here in the next 2 weeks for everybody in the world is probably going to be traveling home for Christmas. So a little cheaper gas prices wouldn't hurt any of us.
It did appear to me when wheat rolled over, that's when the beans began to come back down.
you know, there was a following. There wasn't anywhere near. We were down as much as 25 cents in the wheat, and we did get down 9 cents or so in the beans, or 9 to 10. And, you know, we come back and we closed only down 6, which when you consider the kind of moves we've had as of late, Dave, those are very, very narrow trading ranges. You know, this is the last full week of trade before the next year, and we're seeing a lot of the funds doing a little bit of evening up here beforehand, and I think you're going to see a lot of different people maybe start taking off after this weekend that way to have an extended holiday.
I believe December corn went off the board today, yes?
Yes, today was the last trading day for the December grains. You know, closed somewhat strong. That's held things together that way, but, you know, pretty quiet, no fireworks there.
Bring it up because March is a 12¾-cent premium to the December. Does March begin to drift down?
I don't believe so. I think that we look at the technical chart, and basically we did close above 585 again today. We closed at 87¼, and that was basically that's sort of the chart point there for the breakout of the pennant on the top side. So we're feeling that we're probably going to be looking at a little stronger demand in here, and it'll probably hold its own for now instead of sink back to where the D's went off.
Let's turn our attention to the livestock side where January feeders finally, you know, they were pretty pricey and pretty, you know, way up there in the stratosphere, came back to ground $1.25 today.
Well, you know, as corn prices and feed prices work on up, it's hard to keep feeder cattle high, Dave. I mean, we've had a good run as far as the price of cattle, beef and hogs. But, you know, one of the things that as we get up closer to $6 corn, it makes it harder to pay up for feeder cattle and make any money on them. So it's not surprising to see them shift back as we see corn get closer to $6.
Are we going to see $6 corn and $14 beans in the March contracts?
It would project to that right now as we look at things and we look at how things go without some unforeseen news. And one of the unforeseen news things could be what the CFTC says about new regulations towards speculation. One of the other things could be China backing out or delaying shipments or not making any new purchases or actually canceling some purchases. Or the weather getting extremely a lot more moisture falling in Argentina and Brazil and over the dry areas of the U.S. But as we sit right now and look at it, why those are very achievable goals for between now and the end of February, Dave.
Thanks, Wayne.
Thank you, Dave.
That's Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities, and he is in New Market, Indiana.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of 5 new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
In agricultural news, China says it opposes a World Trade Organization ruling that the United States acted within its rights when it raised import taxes on Chinese tires by as much as 35%, and it says it will file a complaint. The 3-year tariff was approved in September of 2009 by President Barack Obama. It amounts to a 35% additional charge in the first year, 30% in the second year, and 25% in the third year, on top of a regular 4% import duty. Beijing has 60 days to appeal the ruling. Secretary of Commerce Gary Locke and U.S. Trade Representative Ron Kirk are today hosting a meeting of the U.S.-China Joint Commission on Commerce and Trade. In addition to the sensitive intellectual property rights protection issues, other U.S. concerns include telecommunications, government procurement, export restrictions, and agriculture. Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack will participate in this year's JCCT as a guest because USDA and the Office of the USTR jointly represent the United States on agricultural trade issues. U.S. Senator Dianne Feinstein said on Monday she will offer an amendment to cut the ethanol tax credit and import tariff to 36 cents a gallon each. The current U.S. ethanol tax credit of 45 cents and the import tariff of 54 cents would be extended through 2011 under the tax bill now being debated on the Hill. Feinstein's amendment would also cut the 10-cent per gallon tax credit that goes to small ethanol producers to 8 cents. PRC State Television today says that China will set a 4% target for consumer inflation next year, up from this year's 3% objective, an indication that the government will desist from aggressive tightening even as price pressures mount. The slightly higher threshold for inflation was consistent with another report in official media earlier in the day that China will aim to cap new loans at about $1.1 trillion next year, a more generous ceiling than many in the market had been expecting. The U.S. Department of Agriculture will conduct a cost-benefit analysis of a new rule proposed by the Grain Inspection Packers and Stockyards Administration on livestock and poultry production. Industry groups, including the National Chicken Council, have been calling for the analysis, saying the new GPSA would cost billions of dollars to the industry. The proposed rule would change the way processors contract with livestock and poultry producers and is aimed toward increasing competition. President Barack Obama signed a bill that would provide money for more nutritious school lunches on Monday. The five-year Child Nutrition Reauthorization Bill provides an additional $4.5 billion for school meal programs over the next 10 years, creates a national pilot program for after-school suppers in low-income neighborhoods, and eases eligibility and registration requirements for reduced price and free school meals. The program also gives the Agriculture Secretary authority to control foods sold in school vending machines and, to a lesser degree, at school bake sales. The bill also extends the Women's, Infants, and Child's Special Nutrition Program, known as WIC, to other feeding programs. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. The University of Illinois has a brand new 400-level course on bioenergy. It's open enrollment and taught online. Todd Gleason has the details.
The Center for Advanced Bioenergy Research, otherwise known as CABER, in the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences at the University of Illinois, is offering an online class in bioenergy systems this spring. The class will meet January 18th through May 10th on Tuesdays from 6:30 to 9 o'clock Central Time. ACES 409 Bioenergy Systems is an online introductory survey course of a wide range of bioenergy issues. Lectures will be presented by the course instructors as well as several experts from industry and academic research. Presentations will be delivered via an online virtual environment optimized for learning that will allow students to interact with presenters and other participants and ask questions, say, in a live, synchronous format. The topics span the entire life cycle of biofuels, from feedstock production to in-product utilization. The class should be beneficial to people throughout the world who are interested in learning more about bioenergy technology and research initiatives at the U of I. Besides gaining an understanding of each topic presented and progress made in that area, students will learn how each issue fits into the broader bioenergy context and the challenges that remain. The course is designed for students wanting to know more about the status of current bioenergy systems in the U.S. and the opportunities that lie ahead. To register, go to www.outreach.uiuc.edu. That's outreach.uiuc.edu. And select non-degree registration. Course tuition and fees are $1,167 for 3 credit hours. Interested participants may register until the 18th day of January. However, early registration is recommended. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Joining us now with energy analysis is Steve Platt of Archer Financial Services in Chicago, Illinois. Good afternoon, Steve.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Last week, when we look at crude on the continuation charts, in the January. We actually went over $90 for a high on the week and hit $90.76. We've since come back a little bit, but with cold weather between now and sometime in January, do you think that a settlement on a weekly basis above $90 is a possibility?
Wouldn't be surprised, David. Today we saw the market pretty much perform in a rather featureless fashion. Like many markets, it almost felt like a pre-holiday kind of trade. What really has been a hallmark of the energy markets here, I think, is still really the economy, not only in the U.S., but overseas. The realization that growth is possibly picking up here in the U.S., despite some of what you've heard in terms of lackluster growth, we're actually looking at 3 to 3.5% growth during the fourth quarter here, following 2.5% growth in the third quarter, which I think is helping to underpin the market and has led to the market kind of reaching a somewhat higher plateau than it otherwise would have. One example, too, is certainly many people are looking at 2011 as showing some further growth in the world economy. Starting off 2010, we were looking at a world GDP at around 2.4%. Now we're looking at it at 4.3%, and I wonder if 2011 will kind of shape up to be the same, in which growth is kind of downplayed going into the year, but showing a lot stronger growth as we end the year. This could certainly provide the basis for some rather strong undertones to the market, and probably still suggests, if there is risk, it's probably to the upside in this market rather than on the downside, not only in the crude but also products as well. So, go ahead, David.
I was going to say it doesn't appear that FOMA thinks much about the chances for any time soon a stout recovery into 2011.
Well, in terms of the market, I guess I'm still generally thinking that the market will probably continue to work itself higher. I think there's still a lot of doubts that it can. I think that will climb that wall of worry.
The products have been pretty perky, though, of late.
Yeah, the margins have actually improved. The stock situation in terms of products has certainly come down with the weather. The distillate, middle distillates particularly, have been quite firm, not only in Europe but also Asia as well. You've seen some moves by China to actually move away from some of the coal-fired furnaces to forcing some higher usage of resid and generators that are run on gasoline. And that has helped out the demand side, particularly in Asia, helping out those margins as well.
10 seconds. Which products should we keep a closest eye on into the new year?
Well, I think the distillate, certainly diesel is going to be a key consideration for the agricultural producers as we move into plantings in the early spring. And that, I think, is if you get some nice breaks here, you should probably take advantage of them to maybe extend some coverage.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you.
Steve Platt of Archer Financial Services in Chicago, Illinois. It's National Bouillabaisse Day. The hearty, soupy seafood stew is widely thought to have originated in Marseille, where fishermen fed themselves with unsaleable fish and fish scraps caught in their nets. On this day in agricultural history in 1795, John Bloomfield Jervis was born. A civic engineer, he designed and built the Boston Aqueduct. And he won approval for an idea that a railroad should be incorporated into the Delaware and Hudson Canal project at a time when there were no railroads in the United States. In 1820, Abram Lyle was born, a Scottish ship owner and sugar refiner. He was best known for inventing Lyle's golden syrup, a byproduct of sugarcane that serves as a spread or sweetener for cooking. By the way, the green and gold tins in which Lyle's is sold today were introduced in 1885. And in 1943, John Harvey Kellogg died, an American physician, vegetarian, and health food pioneer. He developed dry breakfast cereals that sparked the flaked cereal industry. Kellogg was superintendent of the Battle Creek Sanitarium, where he developed the first breakfast cereals for his patients, granola and Toasted Flakes. His brother, William Kellogg, founded the Battle Creek Toasted Cornflake Company to produce cornflakes, and that company eventually was shortened to Kellogg's. And that's This Day in Agricultural History. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us for our look at the agricultural weather is meteorologist Don Day of Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Good afternoon, Don.
Good afternoon.
We would love to see that the cold air has moved off to the east and out of the Corn Belt. Are we going to have that anytime soon?
No. We are going to have some moderation in temperature, but when you still add everything up, temperatures are still going to be averaging well below normal across all of the Midwest and Corn Belt. Really, most of the nation is going to be looking at below normal temperatures, especially from the northern plains to the Gulf Coast to the East Coast up through the Great Lakes. Only in the desert southwest and some areas of the southern plains where our temperature is going to be normal or a little bit above. So I'm afraid that we're going to need to get used to the cold. We're probably going to have more episodes of cold all the way up into the new year.
I was going to ask if you thought it was going to last into January.
Yeah, it certainly is looking that way. There is a measure of cold air in the northern high latitudes that we call the Arctic Oscillation. And right now, that figure is indicating that there is still, across the northern hemisphere, a tremendous amount of cold air, and in many areas colder than normal, even for December. And as long as we see that trend continuing, and I think we will, we'll probably have the opportunity for more episodes of cold well into the new year.
We don't usually talk about frozen orange juice crop, but I was surprised to see that it was 28 degrees down in Tampa overnight.
Yeah, Orlando, Tampa, 28 degrees. This marks the second winter in a row where they've had temperatures like this. And actually this year it came a little earlier. They saw temperatures like this in January of last year. And with the penetration of these cold air masses coming in out of Canada, this may happen again this winter season, where cold air gets all the way to those Gulf Coast areas.
Let's turn our attention to South America, where as cold as it is here in the Midwest, it's as hot as it can be there, with daytimes over 100 in some parts.
Yeah, definitely hot. The trend, though, is going to be a little cooler, especially Brazil. Argentina is still going to have some hot spots, but there's going to be a little relief from the heat. There's going to be a little bit of precipitation with that cooler air, but it still looks like there's going to be some dry areas. Argentina in particular looks to be fairly dry.
Southwestern Mato Grosso, northwestern Mato Grosso do Sul, those areas really could use some rain.
And they don't really have much of a chance. A little's in the forecast, but probably not a lot to turn the corner in terms of their dryness.
Cold other places, bitter cold in China for the next few days.
Yeah, we have three big pockets of cold air in the northern hemisphere. That one over China, one up over the Gulf of Alaska, Alaska's north slope into Siberia, then into the northeast and eastern portions of Canada. And these areas of cold air are going to have a real hard time moving. So areas that are cold now across the northern hemisphere will stay that way.
Thank you very much, Don.
Thank you.
That's Don Day of Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming, and that's today's Closing Market Report. You can hear it again at our website at willag.org or subscribe to the podcast. Click on the link in the right navigation window. This is Dave Dickey.